Our agenda is here. I'll scribe today. So on our agenda today, we have this discussion about the JSON-LD syntax and the alignment with RDF. So there's a fairly large discussion that's happening in the RDF working group right now. We have to figure out some way of getting everybody on the same page in both groups. The second issue is 156, which is the compact API issue. Next one is whether or not base IRI is used to expand type. And issue 159 is figuring out how we're going to add language to expanded form. Are there any other issues that we need to discuss? Anything else that should be discussed during the call? Okay, let's go ahead and jump into the first topic then. Let's see. So we have an issue now tracking the RDF working group discussion. Specifically, this is a concern that Michael Hasenblas raised on Quora, and that discussion led into kind of Google Plus, and then the discussion then ended up on the RDF working group, where it is still continuing. The general concern that Michael has raised is that JSON-LD does not align enough with RDF. And so when pushed for specifics, Michael ended up deferring to Peter Schneider. And Peter's main argument was that we end up defining a data model, the JSON-LD data model, that is, in his belief, a parallel to the RDF model. Now, as we know, we've discussed this in the past, and it's not necessarily a perfect parallel, but it's close enough to where Peter feels that we should just defer completely to the RDF data model where we discuss the JSON-LD data model section. Now, if we do that, that has a number of ramifications on what we view a conforming JSON-LD document as, about what can be marked up, about whether or not JSON documents can be, you know, considered conforming JSON-LD documents. It raises a whole bunch of issues. But in the end, it really doesn't have a broad impact on the usability of JSON-LD. Like, it doesn't really change the way that developers would modify this, the way developers would use JSON-LD. So at a high level, that's I think what we're dealing with. We have a couple of approaches that we could take, but before we do that, Richard, would you mind? Have you spoken with Michael at all, or Peter Schneider, to kind of figure out what their technical objections are at this point?
I have spoken off-list with both of them, and I believe there's a number of issues. I think they can basically there's two parts to it. The one is about whether JSON-LD isn't reinventing the wheel. There's a perception that essentially JSON-LD is kind of reinventing the wheel, as in unnecessarily sort of forking the RDF data model, in a way that ultimately will decrease interoperability between different systems. So that is one issue. The other issue is, I believe, maybe not so much a technical issue, but more one about marketing, or about marketing at the end of the day, which I think is a perception that essentially the argument, Manu, that you're making frequently, that essentially JSON-LD wouldn't work if it mentions RDF too much, and the people would just be turned off if RDF is mentioned too much. So there's some concern, I think, that, or there's basically some, so not everybody disagrees with that view, basically. And I think those are the main, those are the two main issues there. So there's kind of the technical side about why the JSON-LD data model isn't the same as the RDF data model, and then there's kind of a non-technical issue about whether it's indeed necessary. So whether not mentioning RDF will indeed make JSON-LD more successful. I think those are the two main issues.
Okay, I mean there are a number of other kind of comments that Peter Schneider made, but I do agree that they kind of fall into those two categories. I think the big danger that I'm concerned about with this discussion is, one, it's already clear that the conversation's becoming derailed completely in the RDF working group. Everyone's going into this, you know, well, what is linked data, and should we define linked data? I mean, it's the same discussion that this group had in the very beginning, and that discussion took like 3.5, 4 months. And we had a much smaller group with people with not as, the opinions weren't as strong as they are in the RDF working group. So, there's a danger of derailing the entire conversation by going down this should be defined linked data and what is it and all that kind of stuff. So the last time we looked at this linked data issue, I think we went with your advice, Richard, which was to basically back off trying to have a normative definition of linked data. We kind of put it in the prose. It's very kind of informative and loose, and everyone was fairly happy with that. At least everyone in this group was fairly happy with that. Did you get any feel, Richard, on what set of changes would make Michael and Peter happy? Like, are they aware that you're aligning with RDF concepts in the document? Like, you're the one that's the, you know, editor of the RDF concepts document, and you're also aligning, attempting to align the document with the JSON-LD document, or are they looking at that and they're saying that's not enough, get rid of the data model entirely and replace it with the RDF data model?
Well, I don't know, and the thing is, since I haven't been able to draft something there that makes this alignment clearer, there hasn't been really anything that Michael or Peter could react to there. So basically, at the moment, they're still commenting on the drafts that don't have these don't have any changes there applied, and especially I think the fact that Peter reviewed an earlier draft first hasn't exactly helped. Let me just say one quick thing there. So I'm not entirely sure why this huge linked data, like what is linked data, what is or what isn't linked data thing, has flared up on the mailing list now, because it doesn't really, it's kind of besides the point at the end of the day, right? Because neither, so it since JSON-LD in its latest version doesn't contain any normative definition of linked data, and the informative definition doesn't exactly, or I think no one has made an argument that the informative definition actually, or the informative language there actually disagrees with any particular notion of linked data. So it seems that this is maybe just some of the working group members trying to wrap their heads around this particular concept rather than any substantial, so rather than anything that doesn't necessarily have to concern us. So and I think so. I think that part of the discussion there, for most purposes, we can probably just ignore that, since yeah, there is no normative definition of linked data in JSON-LD anymore. So and for that reason, this is kind of I guess I sort of expected the discussion like this to flare up anyways. And I mean, if we had left, so if this discussion, so if this normative definition of linked data would still be there, then you'd be, so then basically, yeah, we'd have a kind of a problem
Yeah,
around there
we'd have two
because,
problems instead of one.
yeah, exactly.
Right.
So and I think so in terms of changes that might be necessary. So yeah, it's a little bit hard to say. And so I've been wondering myself, and I've been kind of struggling with what's the best approach to take in order to sort of propose changes or propose this particular appendix that would define the relationship to RDF more formally. So one problem that I have there is that so it seems to me that some so in this definition of linked data in is it I believe it's section 3.1 so I believe that definition kind of leaves a number of details open that basically might become clear once you read through the rest of the syntax specification, or in some cases become clear once you read the API documentation. And so the thing that was mentioned with, if you have the same ID twice in a document, is that actually the same node in the graph, or are these two different nodes in the graph? That's one of these examples. And I think there's a couple more things there, like so there might be a couple more things there around how exactly the data types and language tags on literals work, and there's so and yeah, the kind of the ordering issue is a kind of a big there's a lot of confusion around that, because so essentially my understanding is that ordering just doesn't matter at all in JSON-LD. So there's nothing where the order of elements in or the order of keys in an object or the order of elements in an array ever matters, I think. But
Unless it's a list, right? Yeah, so that's correct.
right. Yeah, and that's something that perhaps so that's different from JSON in a way, right? Where at least you'd expect that at any time you can sort of stick several elements into an array, and so this difference doesn't seem to be pointed out very clearly. And so there's a couple of these things that essentially I think so it would be a good idea to make those clearer. So on the one hand, I think it would be a good idea to make those clearer in the data model definition. On the other hand, yeah, so you've raised concerns that making this data model definition more explicit would essentially make it more complicated as well, and would lead to yeah, so would sort of from an editorial point of view or from a didactic point of view not be so good. So and I'm not sure how to resolve that tension.
Yeah, and just to point out that that is somewhat of a parallel issue to the concern that Peter and Michael are raising, right? So because theirs has more to do with RDF data model alignment, and if we defer entirely to the RDF data model, that still does not necessarily answer those questions, the concerns, the things that you said that need to be clarified. Doing the deferring to the RDF data model still wouldn't really clarify those points. So I see those as, I think that yes, that's, those are legitimate concerns, but I see those as parallel issues to the ones that Michael and Peter are raising. So I guess one question that I have for you, Richard, is has your position on this changed since we last spoke? Meaning, do you feel that the addition of being very explicit in an appendix on what the mapping between the JSON-LD data model and the RDF data model, do you feel that that is enough, that's enough from your standpoint, or do you feel that we need to do more now?
So in my opinion, so I think that the section 3.1 still needs, so still would benefit from some clarifications. And so that's not necessarily a huge problem, but or a huge complication. It might be things like essentially a statement that so something along the line, what exactly a string is, or that a string can have a language tag associated, for example, or that you can't have. So if that's indeed the case, you can't have two nodes that are labeled with the same IRI because they end up being the same node actually. So this kind of clarifications, which I think, so there might this compact list of seven points there a little bit longer, I think they should be so a few of these small refinements should be made to the data model just in order to make it really clear what it actually is, because that is essentially, that's kind of necessary to understand how, or to say how exactly it maps to the RDF data model. I don't have a strong opinion on how to do that editorially, whether those things should be, you know, should become bullet points 8, 9, 10 on that list there in 3.1, or whether they can go somewhere else.
Let's just say that they become bullet points on that list. Would that, I don't think that anyone in the group, correct me if I'm wrong, Marcus or Nicholas, but I don't think anyone in this group would have an objection to doing that, to making the data model more concise, or more precise, rather. But you believe that doing that and then being very clear about the mapping from the JSON-LD data model to the RDF data model would be sufficient to meet the RDF working group charter?
Well, from my point of view, that would... I can obviously only speak for myself here. So from my point of view, and so as an editor of the RDF concepts spec and as a member of the working group, I would be satisfied that the issue of the relationship of JSON-LD and RDF would be sufficiently clear if those clarifications to the data model are made and if there's an appendix that says how exactly that maps to the RDF data model. So from my point of view, that would address the concern of this alignment or whether JSON-LD is or isn't RDF. So I would make an argument within the working. So if others feel that this alignment should be even closer, so that, you know, the section 3.1 should actually just defer to RDF directly, then I'd be happy to, so I'd be prepared to argue that the approach of JSON-LD defining its own data model and just having an alignment with RDF is sufficient.
Okay, that's good. Francois, you're on the queue.
Hi. When I read the spec, I think the section 3.1 is pretty clear on the JSON-LD data model, and so I'm all in favor of making it more precise if it can be. That's good. I'm more on the developer side than on the RDF side, so I'm entering the RDF world through JSON LD basically, and I still can't find anywhere something that tells me what's the difference between that data model and the RDF data model. And for me, they just look alike. There, I can tell a tiny bit of difference in the use of IRI on properties, but that's basically all I can figure out as a difference. So I'm wondering if there's a place that explains the exact difference between the JSON LD data model and the RDF data model, and if we couldn't just add this somewhere.
Yeah,
just in my view, that would resolve most of the concerns I see based on the RDF mailing list.
François, I fully agree, and I see that as one of the goals of this appendix that I have agreed to write, which would say how the data models map to each other, and in the process would also point out where the differences are. I've had an action to do this for quite a while, but I've been traveling a lot over the last couple of weeks and just have not yet managed to complete that action.
Okay, but the plan is to do. Go ahead, François.
Sorry, just to clarify, that's Appendix B, right? The current Appendix B.1 or something like that. The RDF. What's the name of it?
The letters of the appendix are being switched around, but yes, that's effectively the section on RDF in the appendix. And it's going to be a normative section. It's not informative. It's a normative section saying this is exactly how the two data models are different, and this is how they align with one another.
Okay, so that's basically what I was looking for, and basically what I think. That's heading in the right direction. So good.
Okay. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah. I think that the most important thing which we hear here is that we're essentially all in agreement about the first issue regarding the fear of forking any conceptual data model. Taking into account the participants in the group and the work that's already been done, that there has never been any intent to deviate from the abstract RDF model. The difference in intent, which is maybe have to be more clear in the appendix relationship to RDF, is that the JSON data model, given that it is using the JSON structure, is a concrete data model. It is explicitly intended to be able to express everything that is defined by the RDF, abstract RDF data model. That's our intent. The reason why we don't want to add this into the document is because this is geared towards developers, and we want to define something which is closed in this document. It's not intended to lead people astray to think about these things, but it's also explicitly not intended to deviate from that possibility. Both Greg and I are using JSON LD to work with RDF. That's the only thing we do, and we never deviate from that in any way. But I'm not really sure if we can express that in the relationship to RDF appendix, sort of explain our intent there to sort of alleviate any fears that might be cropping up when people read this document, not knowing our intent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so I think it's important to. There are a couple things here that I think are important to point out. One of them is that this is not the first time that this has come up. We've discussed this many times before, and it sounds like on this call, anyway, with the people that are present, we are coming to the same conclusion that we have always come to. So that's actually a good thing. The second thing to point out is that I don't think that when Michael and Peter picked up the spec that they had the benefit of kind of the history of working in this group to understand that we have had this conversation before and we are concerned about the same things that they're concerned about, but we also have a parallel set of concerns about making the document easy to read, just basically making it a fairly concise document for web developers to read. Not that we expect web developers to just jump into the spec and read it, but because it kind of sets the tone for how this language is, you know, fits into the whole, you know, semantic web space. And I think that the third thing, which is a bit worrisome to me, is that both Michael and Peter have said, Michael has stated very clearly that he thinks JSON-LD is a complete mistake and that he plans to ignore it. Peter has said that he has no interest in using JSON-LD. And so to have comments come in from people that say that they have no interest in the language or don't believe in it or whatever, you know, they just don't believe that this is the right thing to do, having those comments impact the spec in a major way where people have already started using the spec, have read the spec, you know, are using the spec in practice, you know, I think that fundamentally the people that have read and are using the spec and are using it in production systems should have kind of a more weight when these types of opinions come in. Now, that's not to say that Michael and Peter don't have good points, because I think some of their points are good. And specifically, I think the technical argument that JSON-LD may be creating a new data model that almost parallels RDF concepts is a saying that's an issue. I think there's an argument for that. But we've discussed that before, and we've said, look, the reason that we needed a different model for JSON-LD is because we're built on the JSON model, right? It's coming from the JSON world. It's not coming from the RDF world. So to restrict the data model in such a way that only certain things can be done has the kind of side effect of making regular JSON documents completely illegal JSON-LD documents. So let's say that let's argue for a second that we take the JSON-LD data model and we throw it away completely, and we say that the JSON-LD data model is the RDF data model in RDF concepts. Now, all of a sudden, any document that doesn't have a mapping for key, so you've got a JSON document with key value pairs, if any one of those keys is not expressed in the context, that document is illegal. It's an illegal JSON-LD document because you have something in there that's effectively a text string. It doesn't map to anything. And right now, the JSON-LD processors, what they're supposed to do is they're just supposed to ignore that completely, ignore it completely. And I think in the future, you know, let's say that we do adopt the RDF concepts or the RDF data model, we can still ignore it, but now we're saying that is not a valid JSON-LD document. And I think that that's something we didn't really want to do in the beginning. And since we didn't want to do it, that's why the JSON-LD data model uses a lot of shoulds and mays, and it avoids using musts in a variety of different places, just so, you know, just to make sure that you know we can be a little more lax with the type of input that JSON-LD can take. So I guess all of that to say that I believe that we have discussed this issue in this group, and we're rediscussing it, and we're not really we're not coming to a different conclusion. We are finding places that we really do need to clarify in the spec. As Richard pointed out, we need to clarify the JSON-LD data model. As Francois pointed out, we need to put something in the appendix, the RDF appendix, saying, look, these are the differences between the JSON-LD data model and the RDF data model. But it doesn't sound like anyone right now is saying we should remove the JSON-LD data model entirely and replace it with RDF concepts. Is that a fair? Richard, you're on the queue. But is that a fair kind of outline of what we're looking at right now, Richard?
No, I don't think so, because I'm not suggesting that the JSON-LD data model should be discarded and replaced with the RDF concepts data model, but I think that course of action, if it were to be taken, what it would mean is first some way would have to be found to deal with keys that are not mapped to UIs, but that can well be done, and so one option is to throw them away. Another option is to stick them onto the end of some base UI or URN or something, which wouldn't be impossible, and which might by the way be a good idea anyways, so that even non-URI keys could be retained in the RDF view of a JSON-LD graph. And the other thing, so that would be the one thing that changes. And the other thing that changes would be essentially, quite a bit of terminology throughout the JSON-LD specification, because so what exactly? So there are some differences in, and they are not that large anymore at this time actually. But in uses of the words like property, for example, that are used slightly differently between the RDF data model and the JSON-LD data model. And of course, the third thing that changes is there would probably be quite a few more occurrences of the three letters RDF in the spec. So to summarize, I think that I'm not saying it should be done, but that's mostly for editorial reasons, because I think the spec as it is at the moment is simpler to digest compared to, you know, the alternative version that would use RDF concept terminology everywhere. But I think, so my impression is that from a technical point of view, it would be possible to express the spec in terms of, into an RDF concept terms. That's my reaction to this.
Okay. There is, I don't want to kind of get off onto a kind of theoretical tangents, but there is an argument. You said that, you know, we could take keys that aren't mapped in the context and put them under some base IRI, or we could ignore them. More than likely, we'd want to say that they're ignored because the concern here is that, and I don't think that this is going to happen, but let's say something better than RDF comes along, and it allows string literals for predicates and subjects. And if that's the case, the JSON-LD data model supports doing that today. You could do that with the JSON-LD data model today, and then translate it to, let's say, you know, RDF Next or RDF 3.0 or whatever we want to call it. But if we defer to kind of RDF concepts that exist today, then that is kind of this thing that's not allowed. So I think that's a fairly minor point, but it's minor points like that that have kind of created this need for the JSON-LD data model, right? We had some really, really detailed discussion in the beginning about it, and we didn't want to necessarily make it so JSON-LD could not be mapped to another data model, like, for example, let's say the microdata data model, if needed. So this, I'm just bringing that up as kind of one of these, you know, yeah, we could go to the RDF concepts data model, but that's not necessarily this completely lossless process. We lose things in that process, and I'm not so convinced that it's a good idea to lose those things at that point. Anyway, I realize that you're not arguing for making that change, Richard, but if it does come up on the call tomorrow, it's, you know, that's one of the reasons we have this different data model. It's that there are things that you can actually do in JSON-LD today that you can't necessarily do in RDF concepts. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, those points were part of what I was going to say. I have some additions to the role of keys in JSON-LD from my point of view, which is that they, in my uses of them, often represent information which, from a data perspective, is more or less noise. Either they are reified expressions of things like reverse relations or property paths or something which you would, if you had pure RDF, you would express via OWL or perhaps Sparkle constructs or something like that. So, and that's because JSON, when applied, often carries a lot of noisy information to alleviate the pain for web developers to do things quickly, like providing counts for comments along with the comments themselves, perhaps, or other kinds of not very pure information. I mean, it's a very general statement, but in general, there are many strange uses of keys in JSON which you shouldn't attempt to express them directly as properties in RDF. There are often cleaner ways to express them in RDF, which makes information much more integratable, so that from that point of view, when I annotate a JSON document with a context, turning it into JSON-LD, I say that this JSON document carries this relevant information, and the other keys are not relevant for the purposes of information integration.
I didn't quite understand how that ties back into the difference between the JSON-LD data model and the RDF data model. Nicholas, could you clarify that a bit more?
Only to motivate the reason for having keys in the JSON-LD data model which aren't mapped to anything.
Oh, okay.
Which are essentially dropped on expansion.
Okay. So I guess the suggestion we're going to make on the RDF working group call is that Richard has already taken an action to align the JSON-LD data model with the RDF data model. So we're actively working on that, and the hope is to have full alignment. We want to say that you know, there's, you can completely round trip from JSON-LD to RDF and back. That's always been a requirement of the language. So we need to make that clear on the call tomorrow. Richard also feels like we need to clarify the JSON-LD data model a bit, and the group feels that that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do, and we should do that if there are bits missing there. Francois says that we need to also add some things to outline the differences between the JSON-LD data model and the RDF data model, of which there aren't that many, but the ones that exist, we don't necessarily feel comfortable removing those features at this point when there doesn't seem to be a need to do that. Is there anything else that anyone on this call feels that we need to kind of propose tomorrow on the call to ensure that we're addressing Michael and Peter's concerns?
I think one more thing that probably makes sense is to, or that might be helpful to address some of these concerns would be to have a paragraph, and that, now I'm just checking that it's not actually there, so having a paragraph in the introduction that says, so maybe at the end of the introduction that says, by the way, the JSON-LD has a data model that is compatible with RDFC appendix so and so. I feel that might address some of these concerns about JSON-LD essentially being very much disconnected from RDF despite being a work product of the RDF working group. So this might just be this essentially a nod that might be necessary or helpful at least to address this concern that essentially the JSON-LD spec isn't fully upfront about essentially being an RDF syntax at the end of the day.
All right.
And I think more than a sentence or a link with a link there may really not be necessary, because just having that word somewhere in there might be enough to address some of these concerns.
Yeah. We do state something like that in the data model section, but you're saying that pushing it up to the introduction might help alleviate some of the concerns in the RDF working group?
Yeah, I think so. And I believe, I mean, it certainly makes sense to point that out to have a link from the data model section down to that appendix as well, just saying, this data model has some similarities with the RDF data model, see appendix B, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a matter of kind of hyperlinking within the document where related information exists.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That sounds good. Okay. And then, I guess... Okay, Nicholas is agreeing as well. Yeah, I think that sounds good. Okay, well, I mean, it sounds like we're pretty much in alignment on what we believe needs to be done. I guess we'll present this to the RDF working group tomorrow and then see where it goes. But yeah. Okay, anything else that we need to discuss on this topic before moving on? Okay, thank you, Richard, for joining the call. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. And yeah, I will try really hard to have that section done by the end of the week, because next week I'm traveling again, and then it won't happen. So I'll my best to get that out before the end of this week.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Great. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. Nice.
Thanks,
talking to you.
Right. Okay. So next issue is issue 156. Let me see. Let me get the link to this. Marcus, I believe this is, if I remember correctly, you had raised something here about changing the signature of the API calls.
It was Greg who raised it. Because
okay.
Basically, the compact API call is the only one where you can't supply an additional context which is used for expansion. And expansion is part of every API call.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any opinions on this? I know Dave Longley is -1. on this. He feels that the API is becoming cumbersome.
Well, I mean, I would be fine with it. I would also be fine if we would combine expand and compact to just one method and pass two contexts in that combined method.
Wait, you want expand and compact to be one method?
Yeah, so if you don't pass a compact context, you just expand, and if you pass a compact context as well, you also compact, because compact is already compaction and expansion in one. If you don't pass a context or an empty context to compact, it's basically expansion.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So I don't know if we really need two methods for that.
Yeah, my concern is that I think, yes, that is, if we reduce it to its essence, yeah, we can do that. I'm a bit concerned that it's going to be difficult to kind of teach that to developers, meaning that the output of the call differs wildly based on the types of parameters that you give it, meaning that a completely different type of operation kind of happens. And I think it's easier to tell people, well, if you want to compact something, then call this method. If you want to expand something, then call this other method. So I think I'd be a minus one on combining both of them.
Isn't that happening already now? That's what parameters are for, to change the behavior of a method. And even now, if we pass different parameters to the current compact method, the output changes completely.
Kind of. The form of the output isn't, like, the form of the output between expanded form and compacted form is very different from one another. Some of the parameters that we pass to it doesn't change it from, for example, like, you know, the in compact form we have this automatically remove arrays parameter now, that if there's only one item in the array, it'll remove the array. What you get back is still, say again?
No, I'm just flat. So you're referring to that behavior.
Yeah, so basically what you're getting back, you're still getting back a compacted document. But if we were to combine both compact and expand into something, what you'd get back would differ wildly. You'd either get a compacted document or an expanded document. They're two very, very different kind of document forms. And that's why I wouldn't be in favor of doing that, because I think it would confuse developers, early developers. I think they might conflate that compact and expanded form are just kind of the same thing when they're not really. They're not even you know, remotely related. They're kind of polar opposites, I guess is what I'm saying. Do we have any other input on this, Lynn or Nicholas or Francois?
Well, I mean, basically, it's not really an issue because you can achieve everything with the current API calls. But you would have to call expand first and then compact separately, and then compact would expand again. So it's basically a performance problem in some cases, maybe, or but it's not a big deal.
Yeah, let me.
I wonder if the. I haven't read through all the comments, but Greg's third suggestion to detect if the incoming document doesn't have a context and just skip the expansion phase seems
reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, but that would mean that you have to loop over the whole document anyway, because it could be deeply nested at that context.
Right. It would be faster to do that. You could still scan the document for context. which would be faster than what we have right now. But we are talking, you know, like 1 or 2 milliseconds.
But, yeah, I mean, I have no problems, and to make it complete, we could add that, maybe even not as a as an ordinary parameter, but as an option or something, and also move that parameter and the other methods into an option and go with that. That would make it like symmetric and keep the interfaces simple.
So are you saying that we would move something like in context into the option?
Well, currently we have a context also in expansion, a context parameter. So we could move that into options and in the compact, an additional context option to pass a context which is used in expansion. Was that understandable?
Sorry, I was thinking at the same time. So, for example, which two items would be added to the options?
To the options, there would be an expansion context would be added to the options. And that's kind of an initial context which is used in expansion, which is then where then the context and counter in a document are applied to.
Okay, so the I'm sorry, Francois, did you have something to add? You might be muted.
No, that's why I unmuted myself.
Okay.
I was actually reacting to potential problem to have to pass the document twice before you can decide on what to do. I suppose there's a way to avoid that passing around an empty context, right?
What was the very last part of that, Francois?
If you start the incoming file with an empty context, does that that turns into the document is already expanded, and the processor can directly decide that it doesn't have to do expansion. Am I right?
Was that a question or was that a statement?
Both. It was more a question to them. That is a statement. If I pass around something like that. Can a processor that processes this document actually decide that the document is already expanded?
No.
No.
To the expansion algorithm. What I mean is that if you call the compact, it first has to loop through all the document to find the context, right? To be able to expand it. And the document is quite huge. It could be in passing megabytes of the data just to assert that there is no context.
I think that's one of the big problems. I'm not so keen on doing option 3 that Greg has outlined. So I don't think we should try and detect things like that. For all the reasons that everyone on this call are outlining. One, it's expensive. Two, there's some ambiguity here. So I'd rather, if we're going to do anything, I'd rather do what Marcus is proposing and have an expansion context in the options. And the reason that we would be adding that is to eliminate the possibility that you would have to expand and compact twice. You'd have to it would be the processing overhead of having to do that. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I was just going to say exactly the same. It's avoiding to expand twice, right?
Yeah,
that's the core. Yeah, and I mean it makes an option makes with expansion context makes a lot of sense. I mean that's what we're after. It's you want to provide an external context upon expansion. There is, it's that's exactly the problem. It seems so. It seems like the perfect solution.
Yeah. So Longley is saying that he has a concern that we're doing premature optimization here. I'm wondering if he understands exactly what the issue is.
But we will still be doing that.
Yeah. I think that the issue hasn't come off clearly on the chat.
Okay, so just to make sure that I actually understand the issue correctly, the issue here is that context is only used for compacting the document as well as engineering the fast failing of the context for the reality care. Yeah, so the issue here is only when something's provided, when a context is provided via link header, right?
Out of bound.
Yeah.
If you have a JSON document where the context is not embedded, how do you get those two parts? It's out of scope, I would say.
They've longly suggesting something I thought of, but then I realized that instead of manually doing that, the option to do that seems more reasonable. Besides, you don't always want to mutate the input as is, but to create a copy and do that. So by providing the option, implementers can decide for themselves how to optimize if they want to.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, the thing is that what Dave Longley is saying, you know, someone can always do it. If they don't like the expand, compact thing, they can always just modify the context for the document, can't they? Just add it to the end.
Well, but that would be quite difficult, for example, if there are is an array at the top level. You would have to do that for every element in the array.
Yeah, but I mean, how many documents are going to have that?
Well,
I mean if they have that, if they have that, then they can do the compact expand thing, right?
But then we could also drop that additional expand context in the expand method itself. It's the same argument, and we specifically added that to use such things, which we also use, for example, in the test suite sometimes, I think.
Yeah. Could we add this feature later? Meaning that if this starts to become a real issue, could we just add the option in the future? I think the answer to that is yes.
Well, what I'm proposing is currently expand looks like this. And the context parameter in there is the one we are looking for also in Compact. And what I'm proposing now is to remove that context parameter from expand, move it into options, and do the same for Compact. So when you expand, you would first start with that context and then proceed as we are doing already now. So nothing would change.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're saying that the chain, you want to see the signature of expand to this. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I guess we would name it expansion context.
Yeah.
And then I guess, is there a compaction context as well, or do we?
Well, the compaction context, that's already an ordinary parameter in compact. So compact looks like this.
Yeah.
There's the context parameter. Otherwise, we would need two of those context parameters.
Yeah.
And if we move that expand context to options, that would be quite clear, I think.
Okay. I guess we don't have the same kind of orthogonality for compact. Meaning, why aren't we just moving the context, the compact context, into the options as well?
Because compaction needs a context normally to, well.
So I guess you're saying it's not really an option, it's a requirement.
Yeah.
It's the default, intentionally the default.
Specifying the context in expand is really is optional.
It makes sense given if you read the definition, the IDL, it makes the signature simpler because right now you have four parameters. Second is optional, and then in the fourth you have options, which is the set of options that affect the expansion algorithm. So it makes sense to move the optional expansion context into there.
Right.
From a design.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And Marcus, are you saying that this has the ramification of Does it apply to Greg's issue at all? I'm trying to think if it.
Yeah, it addresses it completely, I would say.
Mhm. Okay, so compact would still have input, output context, callback, and options. And expand would just have the document, and then expand options. Okay, and Dave Longley seems to be in agreement with that. Okay, so the proposal is move the expansion context, move the optional expansion context in the expand call to the options.
To JSON-LD options.
To the options. To JSON-LD options. Okay, so move the optional expansion context parameter in the expand call into the last JSON-LD options parameter. Does that work?
Yeah. And maybe use that parameter also in the compact call.
Yeah, so that would be a different proposal. So let's talk about that right after we do this one. Dave only might not plus one that because he's not on the call. Okay, so let's mark that as resolved, and then we'll wait for Dave Longley and Greg's feedback on that. Okay, so the next next one is whether or not we want to use that in the compact call.
Yeah.
I'm a bit less clear on this. My concern is that, so I guess if we specify that, would it be appended to all of the contexts? Is that correct? To the end of all the contexts that are specified in the incoming document for compact?
No, it would compact internally calls expand.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm suggesting now is that exactly the same JSON-LD options are passed to that expand call, so you don't drop that path expand context.
Let's see.
So if you add an expand context in the options of a compact call, you just pass those options then to the internally called expand call.
Is the assumption here that, so what happens when you pass a compacted document into compact? It will expand it based, today, it will expand based on the context that's specified in the compacted document. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're saying if you specify the expand context, it would ignore the context completely? Or it would expand first? Go ahead.
Neither of those. It would start as if there would be a proper around the document which contains that context. So basically, you initialize the active context with that past context and then proceed as usual.
Okay. Okay, so the first context processed would be expand context, then document.
That's exactly what happens today with the context parameter in expand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I'm okay with that. I'm trying to think of what, if that has any negative ramifications. So if someone specifies that via the link header, what the developer can do is just shove that into the compact call,
and use his own context to compact it according to a different context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something seems weird with this, but it might just be that it's a new idea. So the proposal, let me ask if Longley has any input on this. First context process. so the proposal would be to use expand context if it is specified. Okay, so the proposal is to use expand context if it is this, if it is specified in the options to compact as the first context that is processed. I guess that's when the expand method is called internally. But I guess what Dave Longley is saying, with the, where the input document has another context, the input document's context is used. Is that how we expect this stuff to work? If somebody specifies the context in the link header, well, I guess it doesn't matter, because more than likely their JSON document just doesn't have a context, period.
Yeah, it would be surprising to see people having both the link header and the context. It's an either or to any sound usage of that header.
And in any case, the one part in the link header would be overwritten with the with the embedded context.
Yeah, I'm a bit wary that we are adding a feature that's very, very
Not adding a feature, actually. We are just linking compact and expand together. That feature is already in expand. We just have no way to specify that expand parameter if we call directly compact.
Right. Well, we couldn't do it before, and we can do it now, I guess is what I'm saying. Adding a feature.
You could have done it before if you called the first expand and passed that additional context as context parameter and then call compact with your compaction parameter. That's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a scenario where you want to transform JSON simpler, because say that you have an external context and then a bunch of JSON files which you know are expressed with that context, and then you want to transform those to using another context. It's good to be able to simply call compact in this way.
Mm-hmm.
So you just say to compact, here's the input data. It has this context in the options, the expansion context, and then you use the real target context as usual.
Okay, so when expanding during Let's see. Yeah, I tend to agree. I might be a plus zero. I'm probably going to be a plus zero on this because I tend to agree with what Dave Longley's saying. Yeah, and I don't think that we're agreeing that this is a common use case, right? This is a corner case.
It's hard to determine. I've had cases where I've used a bunch of local data, which I had to find an input context for, which I wanted to do something with. But that's for testing out things. So I came across scenarios looking to be a bit simplified by this, but I can't say if they will be common. But I think that since we have these options, and it seems quite natural to add this to the API. I mean, if the expand, given the resolved proposal we just had, I think it makes sense to pass the same parameter to the internal expand used when you call compact.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it. It feels more uniform.
Mm-hmm. Francois, you're on the queue.
Yeah, just to agree with Niklas, it makes it more consistent if the same option can be passed to expand and compact, especially if actually there is only one JSON ID options interface defined in the spec.
Mm-hmm.
But it
yep.
seems to be the case. And it doesn't seem to add a lot of complexity to the implementation. So it's, I suppose implementations already do this, already apply the expansion in compact and so on. So it's it doesn't complexify anything. It doesn't make things
mm-hmm.
more complex and it's expensive.
Okay, so let's just go ahead and do a proposal. The proposal is process the expand context option when performing compact. When expanding during the compact call, the expand context is applied first, followed with any other context held in the document being processed. Is that seem to... Is that proposal okay with folks? So plus one, minus one, plus zero. Marcus, Niklas, Francois. And then Francois plus one minus one plus zero. There we go. Okay. All right. That's resolved. That's that issue. 11:23. Let's see if we can. We have 7 minutes left. Let's see if we can address issue 162. Okay. So this is basically the question that should base IRI use. Be used to expand type. Let me get the link to the issue here. So the question here is whether or not we should use the base IRI to expand a type if it's a. Let's see. I guess if it's a relative value.
If the value in type it isn't a defined term.
Yeah, I guess what should we do if it's not?
Yeah. if there is a vocab, if it's not a defined term and there is no vocab to be explicit. And then the question is, should it be dropped or should it be resolved against the document's IRI? I think that I agree with Greg's argument. I think of this value space, I mean, it's obviously special since vocab is used with it and it's not used with regular ID values.
A related question is vocab really a base IRI or is that kind of a prefix? So do we use textual concatenation or do we really use it as a base IRI?
Right, so you raised that issue. It's not on today's agenda, right?
Yeah, but it's because very related, I would say.
Yeah, it's used with concatenation. It's not. It shouldn't be resolved against. It seems to be a misformulation in the spec.
Mm-hmm.
It's just used as with string concatenation.
Okay, so I believe we wanted to resolve type against vocab. Is that right? It seems strange because vocab was supposed to, so in general it was supposed to be for keys, not values, JSON keys, not JSON values. Is there any place on the right-hand side where we use vocab right now other than type?
No.
We don't use it for ID. We don't use it for... So we don't. So type would be this very special thing if we use vocab to resolve it. There is an argument for doing that because, you know, if you're using schema.org, clearly you want to be able to do, you know, person for the type.
But the question is not really whether we use vocab for type. It's whether if vocab is not present, do we resolve a value relative to the base IRI of the document, or don't we do that?
Yeah, I'm talking about vocab first because it might influence our decision on the second one. So if we basically say, look, the only way to expand type is to have something in the context. If you don't have something in the context, type will be ignored. Right? That's one way to go about it. And the other way to go about it is to say, well, type's kind of a special thing, in that it's vocab is applied to it if vocab exists, and if vocab doesn't exist, then base is applied to it. So is type special or not, I guess, is the first question. And I could argue I'm slightly in favor of saying that type is special because of schema.org, because you want to be able to do vocab something and then just have a whole bunch of schema.org properties in there, and you want to be able to just put the, like, person or whatever for the type.
Well, I wouldn't say that type is special. I would say that vocab is special. That's special in many regards. It basically changes the interpretation of the whole document.
I think that wouldn't you be able to achieve what you're after here if you could say vocab equals empty string and we define that to be resolved, or somehow be able to say that use the base of the use the document as vocab or something like that. Well, actually, you'd need a hash mark as well, I think, if you want something safe.
Yeah, but that affects all the properties as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. But I mean, in general, if I wanted to use locally defined types, I would use
RDF type with an IRI, possibly using type coercion and defining a term for that rather than using at type. Just use a property with a reference. Another way would be to support something like dot slash in general in the type value and then resolve it. I wouldn't go down that path necessarily, though. I'd rather prefer to have vocab expressed as document base.
I would be completely fine with supporting vocab for at type, but if vocab isn't present, I would like to fall back to a relative IRI. That's the only thing I would like to have, because I think it's quite, well, it's, how to say that? I mean, if I would design, for example, a web service, I would probably use relative IRIs because I wouldn't know, or I would like to test it locally and remotely. So I would probably use just relative IRIs everywhere and depend on the document's base IRI. And I don't really see why type shouldn't allow relative IRIs.
I think that it might confuse people because in general it isn't thought of like that as a special keyword. And the RDF use cases I'm familiar with and in the general practice in RDF wouldn't be to have local types. If you had local types, you probably go out of the way to express that. If you think of Turtle, for instance, you'd use explicitly use either IRIs, IRI literals, well, not literals, but IRI values for the type value with local references.
Yeah, I guess if you want to do that, Marcus, why can't you just specify a prefix and use that for all your types?
Yeah, but I can do exactly the same in Turtle. I just pass a relative IRI to the value of RDF type. Is that any different?
Yeah, but there you have a difference in syntax between IRIs and QRIs. We don't have that here. And since type behaves using resolving like properties against vocab, I think that the value space is the same as with properties.
But at the same time, we are saying that type, the value of type is an IRI.
Yeah, it's resolved to an IRI.
So I can pass in an absolute IRI. I can pass in a... Why shouldn't I be able to pass in a relative then as well?
It's the same value space as with terms.
Well, properties, terms are a bit special in JSON-LD, I would say. Or in properties, not terms. Because also in ID, I have the same. I can use terms in at ID also expand. It's not that they don't expand in at ID, for example.
Yeah, but they well, that's a danger. I'm not very comfortable with that, but I figured that if you want to be sure that you don't accidentally expand them, you can use dot slash or full base IRIs there. I'm not too keen about that feature, actually, but I think that given that type is resolved against vocab or
There is an argument for making type expand, making type use the base IRI, and that is that everything on the right is supposed to use the base IRI if it's a relative path. Is that right? Right now in the spec? So if we have a relative IRI on the right-hand side, it's supposed to use the base IRI?
Yes.
So that would be consistent. I'd use as a base IRI. And I mean, we're just, and I agree with you, Nicholas, that it's not something that we want people to do. It's not a best practice at all. But I think for consistency's sake, in, at least in this case, it, you know, I'm kind of on the fence, and the consistency argument seems to me to be the strongest argument. And I don't think that voc, and the weird thing here, I think the really weird thing here is in the schema.org case, specifically in schema.org, I would expect vocab to apply to type. And we may want to make an exception for that. So we may say that the way that you resolve type is you check to make sure that, I mean, it uses a standard, well, the way you expand type is you go through and you look for a term or a prefix. If there are no matches there, I think vocab overrides, is that right? Or it's the other way around? Whichever way it is.
Terms override vocab.
Okay, so if there's a term, use that. If that doesn't exist, use vocab. If vocab doesn't exist, use the base IRI.
Yeah.
And I think if we do that, we're consistent, and we also cover the schema.org use case. And there are certain ways that it could be used in a very non-standard, nasty way, but, you know, we can't prevent people from shooting themselves in the foot.
No, the consistency with the behavior of ID, which I inheriting the discomfort I have from that behavior into this discussion, and I can, it seems that I'm not as consistent as I should be there, so I can see your point of view there. But the good point, the important point is that I don't really see the use cases. I mean, you would define types local to the place where you publish the data.
Yeah, and that's just bad. We don't want people to do that, but
you should avoid that.
Why is that bad?
You should try to use commonly understood. You should use commonly understood types. The only exception is if you publish data and you have extremely local subclasses of commonly understood types. Otherwise, it's not about sharing integratable data in the same way. It's just
But you can use JSON-LD also to define vocabularies, for example.
Yes.
And there it would make sense again, I think.
Well, in vocabularies, you normally use the OWL and RDF schema types as the value of type. In some cases, you mix them, but those are the exceptions. So you normally define a prefix, which is at that the same as the base IRI. But sure, there are cases where you could see this pattern. I'm not sure about the value, but given the consistency argument, I won't vote against this, I think.
Okay, so the proposals in IRC. So when resolving IRIs for type, we first use term and prefix if that exists. If not, we use vocab. If vocab does not exist, then we use a base IRI to resolve type. Does that sound good?
Just realized we haven't looked at Greg's votes. Greg said plus zero if properties aren't expanded from the document base. Well, the same arguments that I put forward, basically.
Yeah, and with that might be something that we want to raise again. The problem there is that, like, you end up with a lot of junk data if you do that. That's the only thing I'm concerned about.
Yeah, but if you didn't intend for that, you expressed something poorly. So it's not accidentally. So I mean, it's not a behavior that, if you understand JSON-LD, you shouldn't be surprised if we allow this. Although you may be
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that there's no way to ignore data if we do that. It's everything's always resolved against the base IRI. There's no way of ignoring data unless you specifically go in and do ID null or whatever it is, or unless we have that feature in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is... I don't... You should... If you use type, you should either use terms or have a vocab in place. If you don't, I mean, either they are dropped or they are resolved against the base IRI. It doesn't really matter from my point of view. Both are... You should be... Yeah, you should be aware of that in either case and probably change it for... unless you know what you're doing. And if you know what you're doing, then you wouldn't be surprised by that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll do that proposal for now and see if there's any nasty things that come out as a result of that. Okay, that's our call for the day. Is there anything else that we need to discuss before we have the RDF working group call tomorrow, and then next week we'll have another call.
Maybe we could just quickly resolve that vocab issue if it's relative for textual concatenation, because I think that's quite clear.
Francois, you're on the queue, but after that, we'll... Marcus, could you type up a proposal really quickly while Francois is talking?
Sure.
Do you have a link? I don't...
Sorry.
Let's just go ahead. Okay. No, I just wanted to raise the issue 16666 that I raised last week, just if you can provide feedback on a written form on GitHub, I'd be happy from the conformance section. Just to know if I should spend more time digging in the document or if you...
Greg really liked your text. I have not been able to look at it yet, but it seems like we're going to have a conformance section. So anyone that can put in time to just do a first draft of that, that'd be great. So Francois, if you want to do that, that'd be fantastic.
Okay, good. I'll see if I can find time.
Thanks for doing that as well. Marcus, do you have a proposal?
Yes. So the proposal is to not treat the value of advocate as a base IRI for properties and at type, but to use it as a prefix, which is used with textual concatenation.
Yeah, I agree with that. Are there any disagreements with that proposal?
No, that's the way it should be.
Okay. And then Francois, I don't know if you have a plus one, minus one on that.
Actually, I'm just a bit lost on that proposal, but it sounds good. It just didn't really understand it, but that's okay.
Okay. It basically means that we wouldn't try and resolve like relative path names within the URL, Marcus. You're saying like if the URL has like ... at the end of it,
that's a minor problem. The problem is if you have something
it's a prefix. Okay, so it's a prefix string, but not a base URI. Okay, so I understand it completely. That's okay. So I'm fine with that. Yes.
Okay. And then, Marcus, you're saying... Go ahead.
Vocabulary like that, the test would expand to example.org/test instead of vocab pound key test.
Got it.
Which is, I think, problematic.
Got it. That sounds good. Okay. That's it for the call today. Marcus, I'll see you on the call tomorrow, the RDF working group call tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay. And then I think Greg will be there as well, and Richard as well. So that's good. All right, guys. Thanks so much for the call today. We got a lot of stuff done. And we'll chat again next week. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.